Hello, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, Friday, April 18th, 2025. From the Champaign Park District, Douglas Center isn't closing. Memo on staffing changes for event registration sparked rumor. Story by Jana Wiersema out of Champaign. After an internal communication sparked rumors that a beloved facility might be shutting down, the Champaign Park District wants to set the record straight. The Douglas Community Center isn't closing. Executive Director Sarah Sandquist explained that the district had said in an email to staff that registration functions at the center would be shifting, and Douglas Community Center will no longer be open to the public from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. That statement has caused a lot of confusion and some rumors within the community that the Douglas Community Center is closing, Sandquist told the News Gazette on Thursday. What we intended to say is that the community center is not closing. It'll remain open for programming, rentals, and other special events that take place throughout the building and the park. Sandquist apologized for the miscommunication and said the changes mentioned in the staff memo are part of a district-wide shift in registration. The Park District recently announced that, effective May 1, it will offer four staffed registration facilities: Leonard Recreational Center, Martin Center, and Springer Cultural Center will be staffed during business hours to assist residents in registering for Park District activities, district officials said. Champaign-Urbana Special Recreation Center will also be a staffed registration site for CUSR participants. Additionally, residents will be able to register during facility program hours using new self-service kiosks that will be added to the Hayes Recreation Center and the Douglas Annex. Sandquist said one such kiosk has already been added to the Leonard Recreational Center. She told the News Gazette that the Park District is responding to increased online registration, which accounted for 60% of its signups in 2023 and 90% in the past year. One staff member from Douglas will move to the Martin Center as part of the registration changes, but the center's other three full-time employees will remain, Sandquist said. The Park District is invested in programming the Douglas Community Center and the Douglas Park and the Douglas Annex with vibrant programming, increasing the amount of programming that we currently have, Sandquist said. New additions include a program for teens, which is expected to start in the fall. The Park District is also planning a Juneteenth celebration, in addition to a separate event held in partnership with the library on June 14th, which will include a ribbon cutting for a new mural on the Douglas Park basketball courts. The piece, which will be part of the Champaign County African American Heritage Trail, draws inspiration from a quote by Frederick Douglass, Sandquist said. She added that the Park District recently finished an approximately $1 million project to update Douglas Park with new amenities, including a new baseball field, restrooms, and concessions. There are also plans to replace the community center's roof later this year. Sandquist noted that during last week's Park District Board meeting, several people spoke about the center, and one suggested establishing a Douglas Neighborhood Advisory Committee. We're open to the creation of that and exploring that committee and having a group that will ideate on programming opportunities that we would add to the community center, to the park, as well as voicing concerns, she said. Next story is the Home Theater. Lights on, but owner renovating downtown Rantoul building, unsure what it'll become. Story by Dave Hinton out of Rantoul. Just like in its heyday, the old Home Theater now has a working marquee, thanks to owner George Papametro. The interior, however, will likely never be a movie palace again. Having fallen into disrepair, the theater building has sat vacant for years since its closure. Papametro, who owns Thomasboro-based AG Electric, as well as several Rantoul properties, said he has spoken with retired neon lighting expert Dale Einen of rural Penfield about whether he can get the marquee's neon signage to work again. He might come out of retirement and do it, Papa Metro said. The roof has been repaired. Now comes the interior renovation, which needs a complete overhaul. There's still a long way to go, Papa Metro said, adding he isn't sure what he might turn the building into. I would say within the next 6 months it will be available to be rented out or something like that. Within 30 days, I had the roof fixed and the marquee lit up. As I'm going through doing the repairs and doing the work, it might dawn on him what he should turn it into. Papa Metro said it wouldn't be financially feasible to again show movies there, although it could house some type of live theater. I'm not saying there won't be possibilities for Rantoul Theater Group to have a dinner show there, he said. I think for the moment I'm just going to use it for special occasions and then kind of wait and see after the streetscape is finished. There's a lot of things happening in Rantoul. Maybe someone would want to put some kind of business in there. The village of Rantoul is giving downtown a dramatic makeover as part of the streetscapes project. Papa Metro said he has toyed with the idea of asking Chaz Ebert, widow of Roger Ebert, to visit the theater building in light of Mr. Ebert's childhood history at the home. According to his autobiography, Mr. Ebert used to visit the theater regularly when he and his parents were in town to watch the Panama Limited race through on the nearby Illinois Central tracks. Now that it's operational, the marquee might feature a few special messages. A big Chicago Cubs fan, Papa Metro said, don't be surprised if it might feature a few Go Cubs signs from time to time. He's not averse to wishing people a happy birthday on the marquee, which he did with his daughter Stella. The theater building isn't the only property Papa Metro owns downtown. Several years ago, he also bought the old Gary and Al's Sporting Goods property, which is now home to TNT Distribution and a sports card shop operated by Brad Swanson. He and a friend own downtown properties that house a barbershop and Jamaica Tan, plus two empty storefronts. Above them, they have refurbished five apartments, which are rented out. Illinois State Police. Deputy on leave, under investigation. Allegedly misused charity's funds. Story by Jana Wiersema, out of Urbana. A Champaign County Sheriff's deputy is being investigated for alleged misuse of funds given to a local charity he founded. Matthew Stuckey, 40, has been issued a notice to appear on May 22 for theft of property over $10,000 but less than $100,000, which is a Class 2 felony. Illinois State Police special agents launched an investigation in November over alleged misuse of funds given to the 1078 Foundation, also known as Back the Blue Champaign County. After a thorough investigation, special agents found evidence of transactions consistent with personal use by Stuckey, one of the organizers of the 1078 Foundation, ISP officials said. Sheriff Dustin Howerman said Stuckey has been placed on administrative leave pending an administrative investigation. To our knowledge, no sheriff's office or Champaign County resources have been used in support of any criminal activity, and no crimes were committed while on duty with the sheriff's office, Howerman said. Stuckey, a dumpster truck driver from Mahomet, when he founded Back the Blue, followed the 2021 killing of Champaign police officer Chris Oberheim, switched career paths a short time later. The investigation will be turned over to the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office once completed, ISP officials said. U.S. Supreme Court. Birthright citizenship on docket. Justices keeping Trump's attempt to restrict rights on hold for now. Out of Washington and the AP. The Supreme Court on Thursday kept on hold President Donald Trump's restrictions on birthright citizenship, but agreed to hear arguments on the issue in May. Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship for the children of people who are in the U.S. illegally has been halted nationwide by three district courts around the country. Appeals courts have declined to disturb those rulings. The Republican administration had sought to narrow those orders to allow for the policy to take effect in parts or most of the country while court challenges play out. That is expected to be the focus of the High Court arguments on May 15th. Birthright citizenship automatically makes anyone born in the United States an American citizen, including children born to mothers in the country illegally. The right was enshrined soon after the Civil War in the Constitution's 14th Amendment. Trump and his supporters have argued that there should be tougher standards for becoming an American citizen, which he called a priceless and profound gift in the executive order he signed soon after becoming president again in January. The Trump administration has asserted that children of non-citizens are not subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S., a phrase used in the amendment, and therefore are not entitled to citizenship. Trump said he is so happy the Supreme Court will hear arguments. "I think the case has been so misunderstood," Trump told reporters in the Oval Office. He noted that the 14th Amendment, granting automatic citizenship to people born in the U.S., was ratified right after the Civil War. He suggested that means it is all about slavery. But states, immigrants, and rights groups that have sued to block the executive order have accused the administration of trying to unsettle the broader understanding of birthright citizenship accepted since the amendment's adoption. Maryland deportation case. Appeals court rejects administration's motion. Story by David Foriakos of Bloomberg News. A U.S. appeals court denied an emergency motion by the Trump administration to halt a federal judge's effort to facilitate the return of a Maryland man wrongly deported to a prison in his native El Salvador, saying the Justice Department's conduct was shocking to Americans' sense of liberty. In a blistering opinion, an appellate panel said the Justice Department must abide by U.S. District Judge Paula Gines's order that it provide wide-ranging evidence about why it hasn't sought the return of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. He was deported March 15th despite a 2019 court order saying he couldn't be sent to his native country. The government is asserting a right to stash away residents of this country in foreign prisons without the semblance of due process that is the foundation of our constitutional order, Judge Harvey Wilkinson of the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals wrote Thursday. It claims, in essence, that because it has rid itself of custody, that there is nothing that can be done. This should be shocking not only to judges, but to the intuitive sense of liberty that Americans far removed from courthouses still hold dear. On April 10th, the Supreme Court ruled that the Trump administration, which admitted that Abrego Garcia was deported through an administrative error, must take steps to facilitate his release from Salvadoran custody and return to the U.S. The High Court largely upheld Chinas's order to do so. Justice Department lawyers have complained in court filings that Chinas overreached her authority, which doesn't extend to foreign affairs. President Donald Trump and others in his administration say Abrego Garcia is a member of the MS-13 gang. In their appeal Wednesday, the U.S. said Gines is acting in service of a member of a foreign terrorist organization with no valid right to be in the United States. But Wilkinson wrote that regardless of whether Abrego Garcia is an MS-13 member or not, he is entitled to due process of law. He also warned that the Trump administration must respect the authority of judges. If today the executive claims the right to deport without due process and in disregard of court orders, what assurance will there be tomorrow that it will not deport American citizens and then disclaim responsibility to bring them home? Wilkinson wrote. And what assurance shall there be that the executive will not train its broad discretionary powers upon its political enemies? Wilkinson, the author of the 3-0 opinion, was appointed to the court by former President Ronald Reagan. Abrego Garcia came to the U.S. in 2011 to live with family and has no criminal record in the U.S. or El Salvador, according to his lawyers. He was lawfully living in Maryland before he was sent last month with about 250 alleged gang members to El Salvador's notorious terrorism confinement center. An immigration judge had ruled in 2019 that Abrego Garcia couldn't be sent to El Salvador because he faced gang-based extortion. Federal prosecution. Afghani pleads guilty in 2024 election attack plot. Out of Oklahoma City, the AP. A young Afghan man accused of taking part in an Oklahoma plot to carry out an Election Day attack has pleaded guilty, federal prosecutors said Thursday. Abdullah Haji Zada, 18, a citizen of Afghanistan who was living in Moore, Oklahoma, pleaded guilty to knowingly receiving and conspiring to receive a firearm and ammunition to be used in a terrorist attack, court records show. Zada, who was 17 at the time of his arrest, is awaiting sentencing and faces up to 15 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. Zada also agreed to be removed from the United States after he is released from prison, court records show. Telephone and email messages left on Thursday with Zada's attorney, Jeff Byers, were not immediately returned. Zada's co-defendant, Nasir Ahmad Tawhidi, 27, who previously worked as a security guard for an American military installation in Afghanistan, is currently awaiting trial for conspiring and attempting to provide material support to the Islamic State group. Prosecutors allege Zada and Tawhidi took steps to obtain AK-47 rifles and ammunition and planned to carry out an attack targeting large crowds on Election Day last year. Florida State University. Police. Gunman used mom's old service weapon to kill two, wound six. Out of Tallahassee in the AP. The 20-year-old son of a sheriff's deputy opened fire Thursday at Florida State University with his mother's former service weapon, killing two people and wounding at least six others, investigators said. Officers quickly arrived and shot and wounded the shooter after he refused to comply with commands, said Tallahassee Police Chief Lawrence Revel. Authorities have not yet revealed a motive for the shooting, which began around lunchtime just outside the student union, sending students and frightened parents hiding for cover in a bowling alley and a freight elevator inside the building. The shooter, identified by police as Phoenix Eichner, is believed to be a Florida State student, investigators said. The two people who died were not students, said Florida State University Police Chief Jason Trumbauer, adding that he would not release additional information about the victims. The shooter obtained access to a weapon that belongs to his mother, who has been with the sheriff's office for over 18 years and has been a model employee, said Leon County Sheriff Walt McNeil. Police said they believe Eichner shot the victims using his mother's former service handgun. The alleged shooter was a long-standing member of the Sheriff's Office Youth Advisory Council, the sheriff said. He has been steeped in the Leon County Sheriff's Office family, engaged in a number of training programs that we have, McNeil said. So it's not a surprise to us that he had access to weapons. Top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with. On Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing ltaylor@newsgazette.com. When she's serving drinks at the Bolt in Humboldt, Alexis de Bartolomeo says the customers really keep her on her toes, but that's a good thing. They're just very friendly people that come in here, and it drives me to love my job there, and it gives me motivation to be there every day, De Bartolomeo said. She has been a bartender for less than a year, starting after a visit to the Bolt's summer block party. De Bartolomeo is looking forward to the next one in June, when the band Country Sky is set to perform. But every year, it's a big get-together for the community. I kind of got a feel for the crowd, and I was like, I've never bartended before, but I would like to try it, De Bartolomeo said. I've learned a lot from it and really enjoy it and see myself staying out there for a while, at least until I get done with school. When she's not at the bar, De Bartolomeo is most likely studying at Lakeland College, pursuing her degree in environmental biology, which she'll finish out at Eastern Illinois University. If you can't find her at either place, she's hiking with her dogs, Destin and Demi. At the Bolt, De Bartolomeo says she enjoys making mojitos for friends, but she's usually going for a Moscow mule. The people who drew her to the bar in the first place have made her one of their own. De Bartolomeo laughs about customers who always play Pink Pony Club by Chapel Roan on the jukebox because they know she likes it. It always gets stuck in my head, she said, but it always makes me feel good that they remember what I like to listen to. It gets me through the night. Flight in Belize. American hijacker killed after stabbing two. Out of Mexico City and the AP. A U.S. man hijacked a small plane in Belize on Thursday, stabbing two passengers and a pilot before one of the stabbed passengers fatally shot him, officials in Belize and the United States said. The plane then landed safely. The Tropic Air plane was carrying 14 passengers and two crew members and was flying from Corozal, a small town near Belize's border with Mexico, heading into the popular tourist destination of San Pedro when it was hijacked. The plane circled in random directions for nearly 2 hours as the drama unfolded in the skies. The plane was tailed by a police helicopter before touching down at an airport in the coastal town of Ladyville. Belize authorities declared a full emergency immediately after the incident started around 8:30 a.m. local time, according to a statement by the Belize Airport Concession Company. In the face of incomprehensible pressure, our pilot acted with extraordinary courage and calm, guiding the aircraft to a safe landing. His actions were nothing short of heroic, said Maximilian Grief, the CEO of the airline company. The two wounded passengers and pilot were being treated at a hospital for their injuries, officials said. U.S. State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce said at a news briefing in Washington that officials were still gathering information about what occurred. Horrifying, she said. We are grateful, I think all of us are, that did not turn into a mass casualty event with, I believe, over a dozen people on the plane. Clearly, we know a few details. We don't know much more. Chester Williams, Belize Police Commissioner, identified the hijacker as Akinyela Taylor and said he was a U.S. military veteran. U.S. officials could not confirm the Belize Police Commissioner's statement that Taylor was a military veteran. One of the stabbed passengers managed to shoot at Taylor, who was killed, Williams said, adding that the passenger was licensed to carry a firearm and later turned his weapon over to police. The passenger was stabbed in his back and suffered a puncture to his lungs, Williams said. He remains in critical condition. James Webb Space Telescope. Scientists. Evidence points to life on planet 124 light-years distant. By Jessica Schladbach, New York Daily News. Scientists using the James Webb Space Telescope have uncovered potentially earth-shattering evidence indicating a faraway world could be home to alien life. A team at the University of Cambridge's Institute of Astronomy made the discovery while studying the atmosphere of K218b, a planet orbiting a dwarf star in the constellation Leo, about 124 light-years away. Their efforts uncovered the distinct molecular profile of gases, dimethyl sulfide, or DMS, and dimethyl disulfide, or DMDS, that on Earth are generated by living organisms, suggesting the potential presence of microbial life, researchers said. Astrophysicist Nico Madhusisyan called his team's discovery astounding, but he also emphasized that they still need more evidence to be sure. He told the BBC that scientists intend to confirm what they've found in the near future, hopefully within the next couple years. These are the first hints we are seeing of an alien world that is possibly inhabited, he told reporters in a press briefing. This is a revolutionary moment. Scientists researching the same planet, which is smaller than Neptune but bigger than Earth, previously detected methane and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. They also reported the presence of dimethyl sulfide, a sulfur-based molecule that can similarly be interpreted as an indicator of life. This is a transformational moment in the search for life beyond the solar system, where we have currently demonstrated that it is possible to detect biosignatures in potentially habitable planets with current facilities, Madhusasen said, per Reuters. We have entered the era of observational astrobiology. He added that similar searches for signs of life are also underway in our solar system, including on Mars and Venus. Disaster in Puerto Rico. Officials demand answers after island-wide blackout. San Juan, Puerto Rico, in the AP. Crews scrambled to restore power to Puerto Rico on Thursday after a blackout hit the entire island, affecting the main international airport, hospitals, and hotels filled with Easter vacationers. The outage that began past noon Wednesday left 1.4 million customers without electricity and more than 400,000 without water. More than 850,000 customers, or 58%, had power back by Thursday afternoon, while 89% of customers had water restored. Officials expected 90% of customers to have power back within 48 to 72 hours after the outage. This is a shame for the people of Puerto Rico that we have a problem of this magnitude, said Governor Jennifer Gonzalez, who cut her week-long vacation short and returned to Puerto Rico on Wednesday evening. She said it would take at least 3 days to have preliminary information on what might have caused the blackout, which snarled traffic, forced hundreds of businesses to close, and left those unable to afford generators scrambling to buy ice and candles. There's still a long road of recovery, she said. Our system is very fragile. Gonzalez warned that the boiler of one power plant was not functioning and would take 1 week to repair, which could affect generation next week when people return from vacation. It's the second massive blackout to hit Puerto Rico in less than 4 months, with the previous one occurring on New Year's Eve. Why on holidays? Griped Jose Luis Richardson, who did not have a generator and kept cool by splashing water on himself every couple of hours. The roar of generators and smell of fumes filled the air as a growing number of Puerto Ricans renewed calls for the government to cancel the contracts with Luma Energy, which oversees the transmission and distribution of power, and Genera PR, which oversees generation. Gonzalez promised to heed those calls. That is not under doubt or question, she said, but added that it is not a quick process. It is unacceptable that we have failures of this kind. Gonzalez said a major outage like the one that occurred Wednesday leads to an estimated 215 million dollar revenue loss daily. Ramon C. Barquin III, president of the United Retail Center, a nonprofit that represents small and medium-sized businesses, warned that ongoing outages would spook potential investors at a time when Puerto Rico urgently needs economic development. We cannot continue to repeat this cycle of blackouts without taking concrete measures to strengthen our energy infrastructure, he said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of our News Gazette, date Friday, April 18th, 2025. Please stay tuned.